It is Friday, June 12th. Let's talk PlayStation. Well, what a week it has been, huh? We finally got our PlayStation 5 reveal event. We saw games, the console, a slight glimpse at the UI, and we have some additional details to go over later in the video, but first we always do some smaller news stories and also our PlayStation Plus reminder. The June games that are currently available, Call of Duty World War II and Star Wars Battlefront II, you have a lot of time to download these games or add them to your library. Let us start with Persona 4 Golden, a PlayStation Vita classic, or really a PS2 classic, but Golden is the best way to play this game. But unfortunately, not many people have PlayStation Vitas, and Atlus sees that, and that's why this past week we saw some images show up on Steam implying that the game is coming to PC. Now, we're also hearing some rumors that the game will actually get announced tomorrow, the 13th, during the PC Game Showcase. So this is technically a rumor, not confirmed. However, it seems very likely that this is actually going to happen. And, you know, the only tragedy here is not that it's going to PC, but rather we have no indication right now that there's a PlayStation 4 version. And, you know, Persona has been really popular lately ever since 5 dropped. And so this is something where I think 3 and 4 would do great on PlayStation 4. There's really no modern way to play these games outside of a Vita, and also, ironically, a PSP for Persona 3. So we'll see what happens, but otherwise, Persona 4 is leaving Vita and going to PC. Now, as I just mentioned, we did have the reveal event, and that showed us what the PlayStation 5 console design actually looks like. And, you know, I should preface this by stating first, if you didn't see, we did a recap and impressions video. So every single announcement condensed into the first 6 to 7 minutes, and then some impressions of the events, so that's why we're not going to really cover the whole thing. We don't have to, we already did it. But anyway, we saw the console design, right? And so this actually happened Wednesday, the night before the reveal event, where the co-founder and creative director at Media Molecule, Mark Healy, sent out this tweet. He said, "There isn't any Dreams-related stuff as part of tomorrow that I'm aware of, by the way. Just excited as a fan. Sony are good at keeping secrets within and without. I'm dying to know what the thing looks like." So there you go. We have a co-founder at one of Sony's first-party studios not knowing what it looked like. And I would venture a guess that most of Sony's first-party had zero idea of what it would look like, because why would they be involved? I mean, when you really think about the hierarchy here, third-party is kept pretty far away from console generations, where, you know, they get dev kits. Well, depending on how big the publisher and developer is, they get dev kits last. Second party is trusted. First party is most trusted. They would get hardware access first, but something like the retail hardware and the general design of the device and what it looks like, this is something where it's safely guarded and very few people are closely attached to that project. So it's just kind of ridiculous to even humor the idea that the box would leak. The only time we do get machines leaking is when they've already been manufactured, sitting in warehouses and waiting to be shipped to retailers like the Slim consoles. But while we're on the topic of Media Molecule, they're hosting a very cool event called DreamsCon on June 30th, and it is exactly what it sounds like. So on June 30th, they'll be hosting a live stream, which they'll showcase a bunch of amazing community efforts and projects that are being built within Dreams. But after the showcase, they're doing a virtual show floor, kind of like E3, where there's separate booths showcasing levels and demos that you can jump into. If you are a Dreams creator right now, you can submit to be a part of this whole thing. Just get your submission in by June 24th. But I just, once again, an amazing example of what can be done in Dreams. A virtual show floor. Moving on to some Naughty Dog news, and The Last of Us Part 2, the creative director, Neil Druckmann, was talking to GQ in an interview where he was discussing the next project, and he had this interesting quote I'm going to share with you all. He said, "As you start wrapping things up, creatively there are fewer and fewer responsibilities, and my mind can't help but think about the next thing. So, yeah, the next thing could be Part 3, the next thing could be some new IP. Now, this isn't all that revealing, of course. When any developer finishes a project, there's two directions they can go. They can start a new one or continue the franchise. So, big whoop. But when we look at least how Sony approaches games, we've heard on a number of occasions from first party, second party, even third, even independent developers, all relaying the same information that more often than not, when working with Sony, it's very easy, very open, and they're very supportive of a number of different ideas, and they don't often try to steer you in one particular direction. That's not to say that Sony, as a publisher, when providing funding, doesn't make decisions, doesn't cross the line at a certain point or cut projects, this and that. You know, they'll certainly do that when they deem it necessary, but we've seen so often that, you know, a developer, when working with Sony, can make a vertical slice in pre-production, do a few iterations to really get to a build that's playable and fun, that the developer thinks is a great idea that can go into full production. They present that to Sony, and Sony often is very on board with the original idea without trying to do so much creative interception, right? And for somebody like Naughty Dog, first party where they're owned by Sony, they're just in the upper echelon at this point where they could probably, in all likelihood, get away with doing whatever they want. And so obviously it's always very exciting to see what direction Naughty Dog will end up going in. Also, if you remember last week, we were talking about The Last of Us Part II's latest trailer, which was using a cover version of the song True Faith, written and composed by Lottie Kestner. She was unaware that her version of the song was being used in the trailer. Well, it turns out Naughty Dog has claimed full responsibility for this oversight, stating we didn't properly credit her. And so some conversations have probably happened behind the scenes there where either payment or proper credit is going to be given to the artist in the game's credits and properly displaying this in the commercial. Either way, that's all taken care of, so good on Naughty Dog to claim some responsibility there. Next up, the embargo has officially lifted for the game, which means review scores are now out there, and so far across the board, very impressive. Some good grades on Naughty Dog's latest uncomfortable adventure. IGN, 10 out of 10. I think Push Square was a perfect score. Game Informer, perfect score. Games Radar, 5 out of 5. Video Games Chronicles, 5 out of 5. GameSpot, 8 out of 10. There's also a lot of other sites that don't hand out traditional grades, so obviously it's really important to read the contents of the review and see everybody's varying opinion. Remember, reviews are always one person's opinion, so don't let that influence what you may or may not think about a game. It's always important that you read many reviews and, you know, surmise something out of that and see if that is a game that's worth picking up for you. But so far, looking very good. Obviously, Naughty Dog always is held to such a higher standard, and this game's gone through a such an interesting news cycle, of course, and so we're now 1 week away from being able to play it ourselves. Moving on to Destiny 2, you may be wondering why we're talking about this. Well, for one very big reason. Outside of the fact that the game is getting 2 more years of support, that the Beyond Light expansion was recently announced, this game has also been confirmed to be a free upgrade on PlayStation 5 if you own it on PlayStation 4. That and the game will run at 60 frames per second on PS5, and that there will be cross-generational play between PS4 and PS5 players. But we really knew that anyway. Sony's already confirmed that there's cross-gen play, and that's just dependent on the developer and how they want to, if they want to enable that for their game. But this is our first direct confirmation, in particular for PlayStation hardware, where it will be free to PlayStation 5, right? We looked at the Cyberpunk situation where they confirmed smart delivery, and you just infer that that will be the same case on PS5. Then we have Madden indirectly stating that they will have an upgrade path for next-gen consoles, right? Not directly stating PlayStation. And so this is an area where a lot of people have been slightly concerned, like, hey, is Sony not going to allow this? And I think what's really at this point happening here is that Sony's not going to, it seems as though they're not going to make some sort of PR statement about it, right? Like, that's how Microsoft is approaching this. They've called it smart delivery, which, you know, that's fine. It's not really a bad thing, but it's just, that's really what it is. It's kind of a PR marketing thing, just saying, hey, you know, this game will work no matter what hardware you buy it on, but that's really what we do right now on PS4, PS4 Pro, Xbox One, Xbox One X. So it's kind of an expectation going to PlayStation 5. So it seems like Sony's not going to call it anything. I mean, prior it used to be called cross-buy between PS3 and PS4. So as of right now, considering Bungie had the green light to actually make this announcement without waiting for Sony to say anything, it seems like we don't have to wait for Sony to say anything. So we'll probably just have to start looking at each particular game, each particular publisher, and them disclosing if, you know, if they have a PS5 version, will it be a free upgrade from any existing PS4 version? So now let's get into some new details from the reveal event. And quite honestly, there's not really a whole lot. What we saw is what we got. There was no extra write-ups on the blog that revealed anything more than what we already knew. But one thing a lot of people were concerned about is, hey, this PlayStation 5 console design, you know, it doesn't look as though it can lay horizontally, but there are actually some official product shots out of Sony Interactive that shows the console can be placed on its side. I think we have two specific different angles to look at here, one which shows the stand. So I think the question now is just, is the stand a pack-in or do you have to buy that? Now, we've never had PlayStation hardware where the stand was packed in. As far as I know, every single time where they've offered a stand, from PS2 to 3, 4, and any slim consoles, it's always been, you know, an optional thing that you buy for, and it's kind of a ripoff. It's always like at least $19.99, sometimes $29.99. I would hope this is a pack-in because clearly the system doesn't look as though it can lay horizontal on its own. Looks like it needs it. But either way, confirmed, you can lay the console on its side. Now, having said that, let's actually talk about the console design, right? So this is something where I did the recap and impressions video right after the event ended. So I was not looking at other opinions or influenced at all in my gut reaction of what it looked like. And initially I thought, wow, this actually looks much better than I thought, because, you know, inherently, no matter what it looks like, I think people are going to be put off by it because they had some kind of idea of what it looked like, and it's not going to be that, especially if people were heavily influenced by mock-ups. So I thought, wow, I think this looks really nice. A lot of people are going to like this. But of course, it's still the internet, right? So people that don't like it are going to be very vocal about it. So there's a lot of varying opinions that people think the hardware just looks ridiculous, or they don't like the clamshell-esque design. And to be honest, there's some really good memes out there, so we'll share some of those, as well as some B-roll. There's a lot of good ones floating around out there. But that just happens all the time, right? I think it'll grow on people for sure. I did put out a poll on the YouTube community tab. Seems like we can always get some pretty decent data there. But keep in mind, it is considered biased, since a lot of the viewership are PlayStation fans. But inherently, this poll does reach viewers that have interacted with the channel and they're not necessarily subscribed. But either way, as I record this right now, it's sitting at 20,000 votes, and it's getting a lot by the minute here. So I'm guessing by the time this is uploaded, it might have 30,000. But at 20,000, we've got 78% saying they love it, 5% I hate it, 17% I'm indifferent. Now, this poll actually fared much better than the poll I did for the DualSense, which actually that poll is over 50,000, which that's actually a really good amount of data. So despite that, it could lean heavily biased there. It's still a lot of people that seem generally pretty happy with the overall design and approach to how this hardware looks. And it is, it's very bold. You know, the one thing I will say about this, to actually infer some kind of genuine information outside of opinion, is that the way that Sony approaches console design, this is coming from Andrew House back when he was president and CEO of Sony Interactive Entertainment, that when deciding the PlayStation 4 design, he had two different boxes to choose from, basically, that they nailed it down to, right? And he kept both of them in his office, and he often just kept looking at them over and over and over again to try and make his decision on which one would be the one to go with, right, for final retail hardware. And he made his decision based on the silhouette of the platform. And I think that is a very important thing to look at here when we talk about the PS5's design, is the silhouette. So when you turn this into, you know, an icon, or when you, you know, give it that profile look head on, it's got a very distinct profile. You're not going to get this confused with anything else in the PlayStation hardware lineup. And so, much like we saw on the PlayStation site, where you had a bunch of different, you know, small little icons of the system's overall form factor, I think that's what really played a key role into designing PlayStation 5. So I could see why they went in the direction they did. Honestly, what I like the most about it is I think they nailed the two-tone perfectly for this machine, because I love the blue accent that actually glows against the bottom white panel there. I think it looks very sleek. Although I must admit, PlayStation 3, I think the fat PS3, is still my favorite console design. I'm pretty sure it's nothing's still gonna beat that one for me. Sorry, PlayStation 5. Now, one of the games that we saw yesterday from Studio Japan and Team Asobi is Astro's Playroom. And much like Playroom and Playroom VR and PS4, this will come pre-installed on every single PlayStation 5 completely free. And much like those games, this will showcase the DualSense controller. So Playroom and Playroom VR were a showcase for the DualShock 4 and PlayStation VR. This will have purpose-built levels that really flex the adaptive triggers and haptic feedback of the DualSense. So that's cool, right? Free content, there's nothing really wrong with that whatsoever. And this is what we actually heard from the Wired articles, where they had a bunch of particularly fleshed-out tech demos that were made to showcase these features of the DualSense. As for the rest of the announcements, like I said, not a whole lot of additional details really came out of the show from what we saw. We just have high quality screenshots, trailers, and blog write-ups that describe the trailer. So we didn't learn much, but what we did find out was two timed console exclusives, which for right now, from what we know, would be Deathloop and Ghostwire Tokyo. So if you are looking to buy a Series X, unfortunately that might have to be a year wait for you over there, but console timed exclusive, so it would be day and date with PS5 and PC. And of course there was plenty of third party here as well. So, you know, I often say it's always important to watch Microsoft shows, whether it's E3 or any of their live streams as of recent, because they're still going to showcase third party content, and that's still content that is going to be available on PlayStation 5 and PlayStation platforms, right? So it works vice versa. If you're a Series X owner or a potential Series X owner, you're going to want to watch PlayStation shows for a lot of the content that Sony will be showcasing as well that will be available on all hardware. As for Sony first party, or really PlayStation Studios, we have to be mindful of that now because the umbrella here of PlayStation Studios includes first party and second party, but under PS Studios, we had 9 announcements, so that's a lot. People often have these high expectations of exclusive, and major game, but that's really unrealistic more often than not. I think the only time we ever had something really crazy was E3 2015, and even then, that wasn't filled with the volume amount of exclusives that people typically expect. Is just the magnitude of each particular announcement. But anyway, what we're looking at here, 5 out of 9 of those games are really large games. I mean, Gran Turismo 7 is a system seller. You may not care about Gran Turismo, and that's fine, but it is a system seller. You cannot discredit that game. Ratchet and Clank, big platformer. It may not have mass appeal nowadays, but it's a fun-loving, beautiful platformer, and it does look so gorgeous. Spider-Man is actually the big one here, a really big one. Obviously, it looks more like a Spider-Man 1.5, right? I describe it as like a Persona 5 Royal. I think that seems pretty accurate with what little information we have here, but the turnaround is just too much, right? I was shocked to see Spider-Man here, but finding out what it is, appropriate, makes sense. This game's been benchmarked so much on PlayStation 5, so they've got some new content ready to go for what is principally kind of the same game, but that's fine. Spider-Man moved over, 10 million, so that, having this available very close to the PS5's launch, you would assume it's aiming day one. That's going to be a system seller as well. And then you're seeing, IP like Little Big Planet come back. That's probably, in all likelihood, I think that game's probably going to bomb. I know that's so early to say, but looking at it, I'm like, oh no. This is a cool idea, very Mario 3D world, but I can't see that doing well. But they're bringing Little Big Planet back. Demon's Souls really speaks for itself. Returnal is also a welcome surprise from Housemarque. That's their biggest project so far. That's kind of like Ready at Dawn, to be honest, where they went from PSP games to one of the most visually stunning games we've ever seen on console hardware, or really I'd argue anywhere. That game just looks so magnificent today, and so we're seeing the same thing where Housemarque, traditionally, twin stick shooters, they haven't really gone too far out of that comfort zone, but Returnal very much looks like a pretty big scale game. Not incredibly visually stunning, but it is a big leap from their previous projects. Anyway, one thing that a lot of people were very upset about is that we did not get a price point for these machines, and we do have to say machines now because we have two versions, right? One that's all digital and one that has a disc drive. Well, we did not get a price point, despite it being the E3 timeframe where we traditionally always see price announcements for brand new hardware launches. So disappointing, and I think more people were even spurred on by the fact that a few days prior to the event, we had some Amazon UK listings that did have a price point, and it pegged the console around 600 British pounds sterling, which if you convert to USD, about $750, which is alarming to a lot of people. Now, Amazon has already quickly followed up, stating that the listings were made in error, but this is something where you have to tread carefully with retailer listings, right? They can be wildly inaccurate depending on the circumstance. So for something like a hardware launch, they're not going to know until Sony says something. But we've had situations where, let's say it's a month out from a Nintendo Direct, and we're hearing rumors about certain games that are coming, and that they'll be available like within a month or so. Nintendo likes to stealth drop a lot of games, and so Amazon has more often than not actually leaked some games. So really depends on the situation. Now, let's talk about the PS5's UI, and we did see the UI. I'm seeing a lot of people not realize this. We saw the boot sequence of PlayStation 5 right before Astro's Playroom, where we got the product safety warning, then it prompted you to press the PlayStation button, and we even heard the sounds, which I'll play for you right here. And then they cut away to a trailer. I think it was Astro's Playroom, which was next. But yeah, we did see it. And this past week, we have another patent that details some features that we could potentially see in this user interface. What we're hearing in this recent patent is in-game stats, so stat tracking, things like that. Overlaying hints, video guides. I'm actually also hearing picture-in-picture might be a potential feature of this hardware, of this user interface. So you could play a game and then choose your own overlay for a video app or a streaming service, whatever you want to do. That sounds great. That would be awesome for long, grindy, trophy hunting games where you could just, you know, kind of enjoy something else at the same time. But add this to the bucket of this complete roster of patents so far that all involve accessibility features, AI, a virtual assistant. You have to assume that a lot of this stuff, or a few of this stuff, will be ready by day one. If not day one, it will come later down the road. I mean, we have a few examples on PlayStation 4 and PlayStation 3 where, you know, things were announced day one and they do come 3, 4, sometimes 5 years in the life cycle, but the features do end up coming. But it sounds like PS5 is going to be very accessible. Now, we also have a VR patent that is meant to tackle motion sickness, which is very important. It's just that the way this patent describes it is very strange. Motion sickness, of course, if you've never tried it, you may experience it the first time you do. If your body is completely still, but you experience a virtual space that moves you very quickly, the illusion can make you very sick. It happens to me. I need a lot of the, you know, accessibility features in games that allow me to teleport or give me some kind of tunnel vision so I don't look in my peripheral vision. I need that stuff to still play VR games. But this patent basically describes some kind of head-shaking device that would shake your head and the head-mounted display. And I guess that's their way of tricking your body into thinking that, hey, you're moving a little bit, so don't be upset that this virtual space is trying to simulate you driving a car at 90 miles per hour. I don't know. I mean, it sounds strange, but it really says that there's a device that will shake your head and the HMD, the head-mounted display. I don't really know if that's the correct direction to go in, but that is something that they are looking into. Now, with all that out of the way, it's time to get to Let's Talk Plus, the weekly Let's Talk PlayStation giveaway where one of you could win a $10 PlayStation Network code. I would like to congratulate this viewer right here. I'll be contacting you very soon via email or Twitter. If you would like to win a $10 code, it's very easy. Follow the link down below. Supporting this channel a number of ways can gain you an entry, and I'll announce the winner next week because I am trying to pay for your games. Those are all the news stories that I want to talk about you all. So, initially the week started off with another predictions video, but also we had a discussion about Sony releasing more games on PC. So it's about the Bloodborne rumor, which we didn't see at this event. But, you know, we have a good discussion there about Sony releasing on PC, if that harms the PlayStation brand. And, of course, yesterday we had our recap and impressions of the entire PS5 event. So if you want every single announcement, watch that video. This coming week, now that we have PlayStation 5 footage, we have tons of games, we have got more doors open for topics that we can explore, so whatever we end up doing will probably be something relating to that, and I already have a few videos that I've been working on, and I've just been waiting for this event, so we've got a lot of exciting stuff coming now that more PS5 information is finally out there. But other than that, that's it. That concludes this week's episode of Let's Talk PlayStation. I'm Ryan Benecki. Thank you all so much for talking with me, and I will see you all next Friday.